Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's EDF Engage interactive podcast, Can New York Reinvent Urban Transit? At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a phone question by pressing star and one on your touch-tone phone and remove yourself by pressing the pound key. Or you can also submit questions by email at edfengage@edf.org. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. And now it's my pleasure to turn the conference over to Miriam Horn. Please go ahead.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Miriam Horn, author of Rancher, Farmer, Fisherman, and host of EDF Engage. Anyone who lives in New York City knows it's getting harder to get to work. Traffic in Midtown now moves at 5 miles per hour. For the 5.5 million daily subway riders, delays have become so commonplace that we have to build in extra time for our commute. And subway failures seem to be the norm. The costs to New York's economy are an incredibly high $20 billion annually. And all this congestion makes pollution worse, damaging both our health and our climate. Our 100-year-old system won't be cheap to fix. In fact, it'll cost some $40 billion. Fortunately, EDF and partners have been working on a path proven in other cities to accomplish the two critical things we need, cutting the number of cars and generating the revenue needed to update and expand access to public transit. In recent months, our campaign to fix our transit has made amazing progress, with Governor Cuomo on board and moving it through the legislature. That's what we're here to discuss today. We do want you to join the conversation, so remember, if you want to get in line to ask a question, hit star and then one. To reach an operator, hit star and then zero, or email us at edfengage@edf.org. I'm very pleased to introduce our two guests today. Andy Darrell is EDF's Chief of Strategy for Global Energy and Finance, and has been working on cities and transit for more than 20 years. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you.
Yating Liu leads Fix Our Transit, a coalition of more than 100 business, labor, environmental, transportation, and justice organizations who've joined forces to modernize our broken transportation system. Welcome, Yating.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So, Andy, I mentioned this amazing policy you've been working on that can both reduce polluting cars and finance a thorough upgrade into smart, clean electric transit. Why does EDF even care about transit?
Well, for New York City, our economic and our environmental futures depend entirely on having a functioning transit system. The subways and the buses are the lifeblood of our economy by providing ways for people to connect to jobs from throughout the region. And, of course, they're essential to our air quality and climate. The transportation sector in New York State is the single largest source of greenhouse gases, and people who live within about 500 feet of congested roadways, which millions of us do here in New York City, suffer significantly higher risks of respiratory disease, cancer, and heart disease.
Well, that sounds like a problem we do need to fix. What is this idea that we're working on?
So we've been working on congestion pricing now for almost a decade, and we are close to the finish line now. So the basic idea behind congestion pricing is that everybody who drives in New York City needs to contribute their fair share to the health of our economy and our city by investing in the transit network. We all have a stake in a functioning transit network, whether we're drivers or transit riders. Imagine what it would be like here in New York if the 5.5 million people who are on the subway every day decided to try to drive to work. Right? It's simply, it would be absurd. So congestion pricing would charge a toll or a fee on drivers coming into the Central Business District at peak times, and that fee would then get invested directly into the transit system.
And what would be the impact on Midtown traffic from that?
So So we estimate that there would be about a 20% reduction in traffic volumes in the city. What that means in sort of practical real-world terms is about 150,000 fewer car trips in the Central Business District every day. So imagine we're taking 150,000 cars off the road and then also providing new financing, new support for transit options for those drivers.
So Yeqing, I've been hearing about something called the Fast Forward Plan. Can you explain what that is and how congestion pricing fits into that?
Yeah, sure. So the Fast Forward Plan is really a sort of once-in-a-generation vision and roadmap on how New York City is going to modernize its subway and bus system. It was spearheaded by the new sort of chief or transit czar that was brought in to help resuscitate our failing transit system. And it really presents a clear, concrete plan on how the MTA with new revenues would improve transit service for 6 million New Yorkers who take the subways every day and 2 million New Yorkers who take the buses every day.
And how much would congestion pricing contribute to that?
So congestion pricing is estimated to raise about $1 billion new revenue every year. Bonded out would get us about $15 billion, and that pays down about 50% of this Fast Forward plan.
That's great. So staying with you for just a minute, can you tell us a little bit about your coalition and what its goals are?
Sure. So the FICFA Transit Coalition unites over 100 business, labor, environmental, transportation, and economic justice organizations with a shared commitment of fixing and modernizing our broken transportation through congestion pricing. And I have to tell you, as somebody who has worked in grassroots campaigns in the city and the state over the last 10 years, I really don't remember the last time where we had real estate developers stand next to anti-poverty organizations and advocates in Albany, all singing and advocating for the same thing, which is congestion pricing. And I think that just really shows you how important public transit is to New Yorkers. New Yorkers don't agree on much, but we all agree that public transit really is the lifeblood of the city. And so Fix Our Transit campaign and coalition is meant to do that, unite New Yorkers from across the spectrum, give them a voice in Albany, and make sure that our lawmakers in Albany really vote and approve congestion pricing by the budget deadline of April 1st.
And so I feel like I've been seeing a ton of news about congestion pricing. Can you just give us a quick update on what's happening out there on the front line?
Absolutely. There has been tremendous momentum behind this campaign, and the congestion pricing discussion in Albany is really progressing in a very positive way. Just this week, it was breaking news that you had the governor, who has been very supportive of this issue, united with the mayor, who has been a little bit more quiet on the issue, but the two men came together and basically said in unison, we have to fix our failing transit system. Congestion pricing is the way to do that. It is a key cornerstone piece way to do that. And we have to get that done in this budget session. So that was the breaking news just 48 hours ago, and it has already had so much political ripple effects in Albany, all in a very positive way.
Great. Well, so Andy, this sounds easy. It sounds like we're just headed for home. Is there anybody that's opposed to this?
Well, I think it's a real testament to the work that Yateng and all of our partners have been doing on this, that we've been able to build a coalition that is bringing all these voices together. You know, when I first worked on this issue over 10 years ago, the political fault lines were very clear. There was a real division between folks on Long Island and in Brooklyn and Queens versus Manhattan. And I think what we're seeing now is a real coming together around the realization that all of our futures are tied together around this transit system that connects our communities. And so those fault lines are still there. Just the other day, we saw some legislators from Long Island speaking up against congestion pricing. But I think the conversation, even the way that they spoke out against it, was very different from the way it was 10 years ago. where 10 years ago people were sort of railing against the idea, now the opposition is more asking for clarification to make sure that they actually see benefit from it. You know, are you really going to invest in my community's transit? You know, I can't really be for this unless I see some real benefit. And the combination of the fast forward plan that Yating mentioned and the really 10 years of civic conversation we've had about this has brought us to the point where the opposition is, I think, in a very different place. And there's opportunity now in the sort of closing days of the campaign before the end of this political cycle in Albany to keep bringing people together and solving those few sort of outstanding challenges. And I'm not saying it's easy because we've been working 24 hours a day on this thing for a long time, but I see the opportunity now to sort of close the deal in a way that I hadn't seen for a decade.
Well, as someone who's lived in New York for 30 years and heard promises about transit that weren't met, how can we be certain it's going to work?
Well, this is New York City, right? I can't be certain about anything, but but we are trying to address that, and I'll tell you how. So one of the key things here is that the revenue from congestion pricing would go into what's called a lockbox, which is legally required to be spent only on transit and transit improvements. So it would go to the MTA in this lockbox for the purpose of financing sort of all the good ideas that are being presented in the fast forward plan. So for the first time, we really have these sort of three things coming together. There is a plan that is universally lauded, I think, as a good plan. People like the fast forward plan. It doesn't have any funding behind it. They like the plan. Now we have a funding stream that could make it possible to implement the plan, and we have our legislators up in Albany all sort of on board with the idea that if we're going to do this, it has to be a lockbox. Now, there's a bunch of questions about exactly how do you design that, and that's going to get worked out in the next few weeks in the closing of the budget session. But those are the three things that have to come together. It's the lockbox, it's the fast-forward plan, and it's congestion pricing to help provide the revenue. And not just the revenue, but frankly, there's no point in buying more buses for our streets if our streets are so full that the buses can't go anywhere. So we need congestion pricing to be able to sort of solve these two problems at the same time.
So before I go to my last question, let me just remind you that if you want to ask a question, you can hit the star key and then one. If you need to reach an operator during the call, hit star followed by zero, and you can also submit questions by email at edfengage@edf.org. So Yating, can you sort of tell us what's going to happen in the weeks ahead and whether the people on the call can get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are right now at the final sprint to the finish line. There is exactly 30 days left before Albany has to approve and adopt congestion pricing. And come April 1, congestion pricing is either going to be in there or not. And the funny thing about working on these issue campaigns is that a lot of New Yorkers don't really know who their legislators even are. And it doesn't take a lot of calls to these legislators for them to start paying attention to the issue because they're not used to constituents calling their offices. And so that's what our campaign is really focused on the next 4 weeks, which is to encourage as many New Yorkers and organizations out there to call their legislators, especially if they live in New York, to get in touch. And the Fix Our Transit campaign on our website, fixourtransit.org, we have widgets and tools to make that super easy for you. You just enter your zip code and it will patch you right through. And so we are trying to really, again, activate as many constituent voices and patch them directly to their elected officials in Albany to make sure that this is a priority and it has to happen. And lastly, of course, so much of the campaigns now happen on social media. And so we would encourage everybody on the call to please follow us at Fix Our Transit, and we're using the hashtag Fix Our Transit as a way to, again, help amplify the call to action.
Great. Okay, so we are going to start taking questions from the audience. Again, if you want to get online, hit star and then one. or email us at edfengage@edf.org. We have a question on the phone that we'll go to first, please, operator.
Certainly. We can take that question from Georgia Wee. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Great. So I'm just wondering, what happens if the campaign is successful after all? What will that mean for commuters?
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
Yeah, sorry. Just what happens if the campaign isn't successful, and what does that mean for commuters?
Okay, well, Yating, you wanna address what happens if we don't succeed in this next 30 days?
Unfortunately, if we don't succeed, we are really staring down a path that is a downward spiral of our transit system in decline in terms of service quality, higher fares, decreased reliability on the transit system. In fact, just this week, the MTA board also sort of said unequivocally that without the revenues from congestion pricing, the MTA would have no choice but to raise fares by almost 30% in order to get the revenues needed, in order to make the repairs needed for a failing transit system. So not having a sustainable funding means not having a viable, reliable transit system, which means that which will greatly decline the quality of life, New Yorkers' ability to get to work and to day-to-day quality of life, and, of course, a lot of the environmental and economic consequences as well that come out of that.
Okay, so I'm going to write to fixourtransit.org and getting active here. What did you want to add, Andy?
No, I was just going to add to what Yating was saying, and please do go to the website and take action. So absolutely. But I was just going to add that from an environmental perspective, New York City and New York State have both adopted very ambitious climate targets in line with the Paris Agreement. And so at a time when Washington is walking away from some of those commitments, states like New York and cities like New York are stepping up. There's simply no way that we can meet those goals and those targets without congestion pricing and a functioning transit system.
Okay. Okay, operator, we have another call, please, on the phone.
Yes, so we can take a question from David Wagner. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
David, are you there?
Sorry, I muted myself. Would you suggest that the Assembly or the Senate is the more critical body to address our attention to?
I think it's both right now. I think historically the Assembly has been a bit more of a challenge. I think the some of the recent changes in the politics in New York have really brought both houses to the table in an equal way on this. And I think so. I think we need both. And like Yating was saying, our legislators are often not accustomed to hearing from us. And so, you know, I do remember hearing from one legislator being incredibly surprised last time around that he had gotten 6 phone calls on the topic. All right. We're doing way better than 6 phone calls per legislator, but I just want to remind you of that because we can be not 6, but 60. That would be great.
Right. So Andy, Wilson Irvin wrote in and asked, do we really need to reinvent the wheel here, or could we just actually catch up to cities where this is working? And so I kind of have 2 questions, really. One is, where is this working other places, and is this possibly a model for other American cities? And the second is, what do we do? He referenced in particular mass transit hubs. So what do we do about catching up to cities that have already figured this out?
Right. So one nice thing about working on congestion pricing this year as opposed to 10 years ago is that we have a 10-year track record of success with congestion pricing in London and Stockholm and Singapore. These cities are really showing us that congestion pricing works. I'll just give you a couple of examples from those. Stockholm did an amazing study around public health and found that as a result of congestion pricing and the traffic reductions in that city, they have seen a 50% drop in childhood asthma hospitalizations.
Wow.
Cut in half, right? In London, they've seen about a 20 to 25% traffic volume reduction. That's on a par with what we might be expecting here in New York City. That's made it possible for them to put more buses on the streets, to widen sidewalks, add more bike lanes, really transform the city in a way that works for quality of life and also for the environment. You know, on your second question about the sort of transit hubs and bringing us up into the 20th century, I think what we're really aiming for here is to get well into the 21st century. Our technology in the subway system today was installed almost 100, over 100 years ago, and we're still using the same stuff. It's time to bring modern sensors, modern signals into the system so we can put more trains on one line in a safe and speedy way. And then it's also time to fill in what we refer to as transit deserts, parts of our region where there isn't good transit access. And there's a real opportunity, I think, to use some of our newer technologies and newer ideas about ride sharing or smaller van-based transit networks to bring people from their homes toward the transit hubs that we already do have. So we have quite a few transit hubs throughout the region. Sometimes it's hard for people to get to them. And so we want to figure out how can we fill in those transit deserts with this sort of flexible, innovative solutions.
Operator, could we have the next call from the phone, please?
Yes, and we'll take a question from Piper Rasmussen. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah. My question is a little bit what you were just talking about, which is how do you make this work for people who don't have access or viable access to public transit, who live so far out in, Brooklyn or Queens that they don't have access to subway or even bus lines?
Yeah, Tinga, since you've got this far-reaching coalition, maybe you'd like to address that.
Yeah, this is something it's a great question. It's something that comes up pretty much every time we go to Albany and sit down with a lot of the lawmakers that are from the parts of New York that are not well covered by the MTA subway map, if you will. And there are really concrete sort of solutions already planned in the pipeline. We talked earlier a lot about the fast forward plan. There is this plan underway by the MTA to really modernize, reinvent, upgrade, and expand the bus network, which is really, if you want to talk about dollars and cents, that is the most sort of realistic way to increase transit access to a lot of those communities. So that's number one. Two, another popular idea that we've heard a lot from legislators from these transit desert communities is that they want to be able to access commuter rail. So Long Island Railroad, for example, actually travels through a lot of parts of southeastern Queens and throughout central Brooklyn. And the problem is that they're either too expensive or they're not stopping at these communities. And so another thing that we've heard from legislators is that they would love to be able for their constituents to access commuter rail as another way to bring them to existing subway hubs. So those are things that's already on the table, actively under discussion, and I would say it's because of those solutions, it really has made a lot of these legislators way more open to supporting congestion pricing because they see something potentially in return that will serve their constituents.
Right. So a reminder, if you want to ask a question, hit *1 on your phone or email us at edfengage@edf.org. So, Andy, is there a model here for other cities in the United States, or are we really the transit city in America?
We are the first city to be looking at congestion pricing in such a serious way. New York is a local hometown and is also a global city, so we are looking at London, Stockholm, and Singapore and drawing from that experience here. I know that that folks in Seattle, in San Francisco, and have looked at congestion pricing, are thinking about it. I've heard some conversations about it coming out of folks in Chicago. But I think if we can pioneer this solution here, I think it's going to open up a whole different conversation. This will be the first time that congestion pricing is adopted at this scale in this country.
Operator, could we have the next caller from the phone, please?
Yes, and we can take a question from Donald Nagel. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate this information. It sounds like this is a very long-term path, not having the plan in front of me. And it sounds like from the comments that some of the legislatures are going to be expecting shorter-term solutions promised or proven before they buy into this. Is there a plan for, if you can forget the language, pilots or short-term wins, quarter by quarter by quarter, so that it's not an all-or-nothing solution to get the buy-in and the movement? Thank you.
Okay, Andy, you want to tackle that one?
Sure, I'll start. And Yatan, if you want to jump in, please do. But I think the focus right now is on the sort of make or break question: is there going to be a financing stream in place to make it possible to think about any solutions like this at all? And so that's really what we're fighting for now. I agree with you completely. You know, we can't be sort of hanging the future of our region on, you know, let's dig a lot more subway tunnels and wait until that happens, right? There may be a need for more tunnels. There certainly is. But I think that some of the things that Yatin talked about, like expanding bus service, is not something that takes a tremendous amount of time and planning. You can get new buses on the road relatively quickly. So I think that would be one where we would see some fairly quick action. I like your idea about pilots. I think that's something that EDF is definitely introducing into the conversation and will be, especially if we're successful in having the revenue stream. I think there's a lot of opportunity to partner with folks in the tech sector and elsewhere, especially in these transit deserts, and think about, all right, how can app-based solutions play a role, for example, here? Is there a way to organize, you know, small fleets of electric vans to help pick folks up and bring them to transit hubs or bring them straight to their jobs? You know, one of the interesting things that's happened here in the region over the last few decades has been the rise of employment opportunities outside of the central business district. So our transit network was built on bringing folks from outside in and then back home again in the evening. That still happens every day, millions of people every day. I know there's a lot of folks now who are moving sort of sideways around the region, going from home to work, and that's where I think some of these interesting pilots can play a role. And I think there's an opportunity to partner with major employers, for example, and figure out how can we take advantage of the technology-based solutions that we have today and begin to introduce these solutions. But I don't think we'll get to those conversations without having this kind of financing stream in place first.
So you mentioned electric vans, and we had a couple questions. Eugene Barufkin and Larry Graff both wrote in asking about electric vehicles, buses,
right,
and private vehicles. And how do electric vehicles fit into this picture?
So the fast-forward plan that Yatin mentioned includes, as part of it, a commitment to electrify the New York City transit bus network. That's the largest transit network in the United States. It's 7,500, I think, Yatin buses approximately. And they've made the commitment in the plan, if there's financing available to do this. And they set a deadline that is not the most aggressive deadline I've seen. I think it's 2045. So I do think that if we are successful with congestion pricing, there'll be an opportunity to accelerate that deadline. Maybe combine congestion pricing revenue with some impact capital or other kinds of financing tools, where we can help the MTA electrify its bus network much more quickly. You know, the technology for electric buses is evolving quickly. Range is getting better. And so I think the time is right to be thinking about that now.
Okay, just another reminder, if you want to ask a question, press star 1. If you need the operator, press star 0. And I think we can take another question from the phone, please.
And we can take that question from Emily Novak. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for this discussion and taking my question. I'm wondering, what roles do Mayor de Blasio and the City Council have in this campaign?
So here is the funny thing about New York City's transit system, which is that New York City's network of subways and buses is actually a creature and a function of the state. And so the MTA and the budgetary, the funding issues are all really controlled at the state level. But as a mayor of New York City, your platform is huge, of course, and you're advocating for New York City residents, overwhelming majority that rely on the system. So as an advocate, that's why it was so exciting the last 48 hours to have the mayor of New York City come out and really sort of unequivocally go to the mat for congestion pricing as the most progressive and equitable solution for our transit system right now. In fact, just yesterday, believe it or not, the mayor of New York was on the R train passing out leaflets to commuters, asking subway riders to urging them to call their state legislators and asking them to vote for congestion pricing by April 1. So that is a huge role in terms of advocacy, the public narrative around it, the urgency, the media attention. All of that creates the environment for this campaign to be successful.
That's fantastic. So I just want to note that Dennis Grzynski wrote in to say that he wrote his undergraduate thesis in 1972 on congestion pricing and wants you to know that he's really glad to see the idea surfacing while he's still alive. Before we wrap up here, Yeting, can I just invite you to remind people what they can do right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, our campaign is at the final stretch of this effort. We have 30 days left. We're urging everybody who lives in New York to please pick up the phone and call their legislator. If you don't know who your legislator is, don't worry. We here at Fix Our Transit, fixourtransit.org, you can go on that website, and there's a very easy widget that will tell you exactly who your legislator is and will patch you right through to him and her. And so that is the most important thing right now, is for lawmakers in Albany to hear from their constituents and to ultimately vote in favor by April 1.
Great. And also they can get on Twitter, right, and make some noise here.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Yes, how can I forget Twitter? That is where so much of the conversation is taking place. At Fix Our Transit is our Twitter handle. Use the hashtag Fix Our Transit. That is where a lot of our coalition members and their activists and their members are communicating with lawmakers as well around this issue.
Great. Well, thank you, Yating, so much. And thank you, Andy. And thank you, everyone on the call and everyone who emailed in. And get busy with fixourtransit.org, and we look forward to having you join us for the next episode of EDF Engage.